Yeah, but I just so enjoy reading them. There's some gems in there that just makes me. The trouble with reading you is that it changes every part of my worldview that I've ever had up until now, since Gellner, basically. So I'm going through one of those, kind of loss of faith crises, I think now. I used to be quite secure in what I used to think.
Don't call it faith, certainty.
Certainty, yeah.
We don't believe in faith nowadays.
No.
Anyway, yeah. Well, it's nice to have that effect, though talking to you also has a sort of mirror effect of making me also question myself because you ask me new questions and so on. But it's a mutual doubt, which I'm sure Ernest would have loved. Anyway, that's great. I mean, just on that, it's interesting because it shows that although you are enormously widely read and had a fantastic life of great diversity and so on, there were certain invisible, should we say, fly glass around you, which
Definitely.
you weren't aware of. And now, because you're talking to someone who's explored other parts of the world quite a lot. And this is, I think, what I had the feeling about that last interview you sent to me, Lee McIntyre. I couldn't understand why his view was so parochial and limited. And then I looked him up and I see that he's had the double disadvantage, A, of being American and sort of an American academic in, and B, not ever having done anything particular. I mean, he's one of these people who spent his whole life as a researcher, which is what he is now. So he's never been, had to do the kind of work you had to do as a teacher or I had to do as a teacher. He's never really been involved with the world practically. This has given him the time to write all these interesting books. But there's not much sign that he's been outside a very limited research field of American academia, where you just spend your time thinking and thinking and thinking, but it's quite restricted. And so, contact with, say, other civilizations, other countries, or even with students and PhD students is missing. But all of us, I mean, none of us can see the fly bottle we're in.
No, but you're right, though. I think one of the things that has shifted my thinking about also about philosophy, when I go back and have a look at a lot of the philosophy interviews I've done, and a lot of them are Americans or very influenced by the American scene. It is very parochial. There are one or two that actually say this. When you get historians of philosophy, they tend to be the ones that can see how modern philosophy is just one tiny part of a bigger picture. But if you're not looking at, say, the history of philosophy, or you're not seeing philosophy as part of history, it does tend to get over-focused on its own problems now and can't see that actually, if you just shifted, you'd get a different perspective, and perhaps the claims you're making aren't quite as strong as you thought they were.
Well, I mean, that should apply to Lee McIntyre because he's the editor of Philosophy of Science and History of Science sort of magazines, but it doesn't seem to quite have worked. But also, it's the main point that Ernest is making in Words and Things, isn't it? That Oxford, if you sit in an Oxford common room all your life and just talk about words and the meaning of words, then no wonder you have a pretty shallow view of the world. And it applies, I'm afraid to say, most of my colleagues who are specialized in some field or other, and they don't go outside it much.
Well, I think that's one of the things that strikes me when I look through the, your the books that the proposed books, and you look at the headings and you look at how it's structured, and you can see that what we've got with yourself and your is a genuine journey, and one of, and it's genuine exploration, and you've genuinely moved from a pretty the glass cage you were in was built very strongly around you with your education, your schooling and all this sort of stuff. And having to then, you know, go to Nepal, go to Japan, go to China, that element, that journey is very, very interesting for somebody who's never actually, basically I feel that I'm kind of like hopping on your shoulder and just taking the journey with you, but not having to get into with the insects and don't have to lose my bath. I can now understand, and I can also, the history stuff as well is making a lot of sense now. And I love the stuff about the witchcrafts. I thought that collection there that you sent me through really, really powerful, and got me thinking about what was really going on with this witchcraft stuff, which I hadn't seen before. And I don't think apart from people that have read your stuff, I suppose, I still think it's not particularly well known. I mean, I know somebody who calls herself a witch and she does a lot of Wicca stuff, and but I don't think she understands this properly either. And I think, and the same now when looking at the magic stuff, you know, broadening it out to that, and the different ways in which you can position your ideologies and your thoughts and your and all this kind of stuff. Again, I don't think it's well enough understood, and I don't think it's articulated very clearly. And I think what's nice about these the transcripts as they're coming through, and what we're covering, or what you're covering, I'm just sitting learning. I think it's so clear, and at the same time really profound. I think somehow there's two things that I think we need to think about. One, about actually producing the thing, which is obviously a big part of it,